Hey, everyone, and welcome back to Big Mad True Crime, where we get big mad over true crime. I'm your host, Heather Ashley, and today's case is out of Moyock, North Carolina. Small talk sucks, so let's dive in. Paul Jandreau held the highest enlisted rank in the U.S. Navy at Command Master Chief. He was known for having an incredible work ethic while also being as charismatic and outgoing as they come. Because of his position in the Navy, Paul needed to live as close to the base as possible, which was in Norfolk, Virginia. He wound up settling down about 30 miles away in Moyock, North Carolina, just over the Virginia border. The particular neighborhood he chose to live in was still under development, so think new houses, lots of construction, and nails in your tires. Authorities later told Investigation Discovery that Paul actually oversaw the construction of the house that he was building, and that was really important to him in a sentimental kind of way. He had worked really hard to get to the point where he could build his dream house, and he wanted to make sure that it was everything he had ever hoped it would be. Spoiler alert, it absolutely was. He had this huge garage for his pride and joys, his Dodge Challenger and truck, and his lawn looked like a golf course at all times. If he wasn't tending his luscious greenery, you could probably catch him waxing and washing his babies. By 2002, Paul was 42 years old. He'd been married a couple of times in the past, and while none of those relationships panned out, he did have two amazing adult daughters who he loved more than anything in this world. Paul wasn't exactly in the market for love, but that year, it looked like it might have found him. Paul had started working out a lot, and one day when he was at a kickboxing class, he met a woman named Letitia Marie Eskew. She was a 30-year-old who worked in human resources and had also been married a couple of times. Letitia grew up modestly in a small North Carolina town, and prosecutors later told Investigation Discovery that they believe her upbringing may have driven her to seek a wealthier lifestyle through relationships with older successful men like Paul. While that seems like it might be a giant red flag, Letitia was kind of the opposite of Paul. While he was outgoing and full of charm, she was extremely reserved, like bring a book to a social gathering level of reserved. She did have a strong passion for fitness, though, specifically bodybuilding. She was extremely athletic, and that is a huge understatement, and obsessed with being as muscular as possible. Her life actually kind of revolved around her bodybuilding, and it worked out for her because she did wind up winning a couple of competitions. When Paul met Letitia, he was immediately impressed by her athleticism. He wanted to ask her out, but knew that she was shy, so he suggested they work out together instead. Over time, they got closer, and before long, Paul was going with Letitia to her competitions and helping her out with anything he could. It's no surprise that friendship turned into a relationship, and it was one that Paul took a ton of pride in. He would brag all the time about how incredible and dedicated his girlfriend was. It was obvious to everyone how enamored Paul was by Letitia, but his friends didn't totally get it. Like I mentioned earlier, they were complete opposites in the personality department, but it didn't really matter. If Paul was happy, they were happy for him. Paul and Letitia only dated for a few months before he asked her to move in with him in Moyock. She agreed, and by June 28th of 2003, the two got married. Investigation Discovery reports that from the outside looking in, they seemed like any other happy couple in the world. It was completely normal to see the two holding hands and taking long walks around the neighborhood. In 2006, Letitia and Paul decided they wanted to expand their family and turn to IVF for help. In order to do that, Letitia stopped bodybuilding, and it worked. She got pregnant with twin girls, and the two were over the moon excited. Letitia had an at-risk pregnancy, though, and was ordered to stay on bed rest. It hurts me to ever have to say this, but at 21 weeks pregnant, Letitia lost her babies. It was a devastating time for both of them in a way that I don't think I can accurately describe, but eventually Letitia wanted to try again, but Paul just couldn't do it. Hey guys, how's your sock drawer looking? A little bit scary? Lots of friends with no matches? Maybe it's time for a spring cleaning, a little refresh, if you will. Bombas just dropped a bunch of absurdly soft new socks, tees, and underwear to help you get that drawer in order while doing a little good at the same time. Once you try Bombas, you'll never look at socks the same way again. They've obsessed over details like foot-hugging honeycomb arch support, anti-blister tabs, and cushioned footbeds that feel like little pillows for your feet. Not to mention buttery soft tees and underwear with no annoying, itchy little tags. They are so ridiculously comfortable, but let's get into that doing a little good part. Bombas has a one purchased equals one donated mission. Every time you buy their socks, tees, or underwear, you also donate essential clothing to someone facing homelessness. To date, Bombas has donated over 100 million clothing items and counting. And if you don't love your Bombas, which I've never met one I don't love, their returns and exchanges are honestly the best I've ever seen. It's their 100% happiness guarantee, and they mean it. If the dryer or even your dog eats a sock, if you're unhappy with your purchase for virtually any reason, they'll do whatever they can to replace it or make it right. We've talked about the comfy, the good, and the happiness, so let's talk about the new Bombas' spring collection. Bombas has new garden party socks that bring the party to your feet. I'm talking stripes and florals, some new vintagey colored rib socks, and a pointelle sock with a frilly cuff for all you frill seekers out there. And since they think of everything like messy spring weather, they've also got merino wool blend socks that naturally wick moisture and help regulate temperature, so they're perfect for that rainy and unpredictable spring weather. Bombas has that incredible return policy that we talked about earlier, but I have honestly never gotten anything from them that I haven't absolutely loved. Their socks fit me like a glove, and they have set a new standard for my husband when it comes to tees. I live for their slippers, and honestly, I cannot wait to get my hands on some of their new vintage striped half-calf socks to wear on the outside of every pair of leggings that I own. Bombas truly understands the vibe. Get comfy this spring and give back with Bombas. Head over to bombas.com/bigmad and use code BIGMAD for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/bigmad and use code BIGMAD at checkout. The following year, Paul retired from the Navy after 31 years of service. He went on to work as a safety auditor for BAE Systems, and according to the Virginian Pilot, Paul got really close with his coworkers. If you knew Paul, you loved Paul, and he loved you back. His new coworkers became more like a second family than people he just worked with. Every coworker who has ever spoken about Paul has talked about how he was someone who genuinely cared about you and your family. Whether you needed a ride or to even borrow his entire car, Paul was the guy you would call if you needed anything. He'd also be the first to show up for you whether you were feeling down or needed to celebrate anything like the birth of your child. One of Paul's coworkers told the pilot that Paul was actually the most prompt individual they had ever met. The kind of person where if he was on time, he was late. Paul also had a strict routine that he followed every single weekday that went as follows. Just before 4:30 a.m., holy shit, that's early, he would go to the same 7-Eleven and buy a coffee for his coworker Dennis. Next, he'd go to Starbucks and get himself a cappuccino, then he'd pick up Dennis and head to work. That exact same routine went on for years. And seriously, what an adorable, amazing friend to go to two separate places for coffee just because you know your friend likes a different kind than you. And obviously, this routine information is going to be really important in a minute, so hold on to it. In 2009, Leticia decided to return to bodybuilding. She also took a new admin job at Blackwater, which is a pretty infamous private military company. Paul was still working at BAE Systems, and one day, he told his coworkers that he and Leticia had been sued by a man that Leticia had had an affair with. We're gonna call this guy Andy, but what the fuck? Can you imagine finding out that your wife cheated on you because the man sued you? According to the Daily Advance, back in 2005, Andy met Leticia on an adult website for people looking to connect with others. And I use the term connect loosely. Letitia, who was going by one of her previous last names, told Andy that she wasn't married, and that was a lie. After Letitia and Andy started their affair, Letitia told him that she wanted to have kids, but it would have to be through IVF. Andy agreed and transferred $7,000 into Letitia's bank account and gave her some sperm. Not long after, however, Andy figured out that she was just trying to get money out of him. She did not want his swimmers. One can imagine that'd be pretty infuriating, but he waited a couple of years before he took her to court. When he did file the civil lawsuit, it wasn't just against Letitia, but Paul too. He claimed to be the victim of conspiracy, fraud, intentional infliction of emotional distress, libelous letters, malicious prosecution, and theft. Theft of sperm. I can only assume. Oh, wait, there was money too. Let's keep going. According to the Daily Advance, after the lawsuit was filed, Paul was shooketh, to say the least, that his wife had not only allegedly taken $7,000 from this man, but also his sperm. I can imagine that was a rough fucking day, and I can only imagine the look on his co-workers' faces when he told them about this. In March of 2010, Letitia and Paul gave pretrial dispositions in the civil lawsuit. Following that, Paul naturally told his wife that he wanted a divorce and asked her to move out of his dream home that he had custom built for himself. She absolutely did neither of those things and continued living there, but in a separate bedroom. Eventually, with Cruella refusing to leave, he just moved on with his life as best he could and started seeing other women. Paul and Letitia both told multiple people that Paul wanted a divorce and that he'd gone to an attorney. Paul's brother Mike later told the Virginian Pilot he'd been talking about divorce. He told me she was cheating on him and that he had plenty of evidence. I asked him if he was okay, and he said, I'm not worried about anything. He said he just needed to get her out of his house so he could have his life back. But Paul didn't get his life back. One night, he woke up to Letitia crawling around his room in the middle of the night. Because he was living in an actual horror movie at this point, he had to start sleeping with his door locked. Paul asked for the divorce all the way back in March, but Letitia was still in the house by summer. She was living her life like she wasn't a midnight floor crawler, and in early to mid-June, Letitia competed in and won the National American Sports Federation's North Carolina Bodybuilding Championship. That would be her last big accomplishment before her estranged husband was murdered. On the morning of June 30th, Paul didn't complete his routine as he normally did. He didn't stop by the 7-Eleven for Dennis's coffee, he didn't pick up his own, and he didn't swing by to grab Dennis for work. Paul, who considered himself late even if he was on time, no call, no showed to work. When they tried calling him to check on him, Paul wouldn't answer his phone. Paul was supposed to give a really important presentation to Navy officials that day, and he had been preparing for it day in and day out, but he wasn't there to do it. This wasn't something he would have missed, but let's be real here, Paul wouldn't have even missed work, let alone that presentation. Two coworkers were so concerned that they decided to take vacation time and drove to Paul's house to check on him. They found his truck in the driveway and his car in the garage, but no one answered the door. At that point, the coworkers knew they needed more help than just them, so they called the police and asked them to do a welfare check. According to court documents, at around 7:45 a.m., officers arrived at Paul's house and knocked on the door. There was no sign of movement inside, so they called the home phone, and when no one answered, they tried Letitia's work phone. At 8:30 a.m., Letitia came home and told officers that she didn't know where Paul was. She claimed they had an open marriage and suggested that Paul might be with someone else. She showed them Paul's dating profile and explained that they slept in separate bedrooms due to his loud CPAP machine and early work schedule. Officers were able to do a quick search of the house but found nothing suspicious, and now I'm honestly curious why Letitia's so freaking confident. Letitia did point out, however, that Paul's CPAP machine was gone and suggested that meant he had planned to be away for the night. Officers left the house with no idea where Paul might be, So coworkers went back there on their own accord, but Letitia insisted to them that she did not know where her husband was. Something just did not feel right about the situation, so later that afternoon, an officer went back to the house to see if anyone had found Paul, but once again, no one answered the door. That wasn't immediately suspicious, but the blue tarp, tinfoil, and frosted glass spray covering the windows certainly was. It was hard to see inside at all, but the officer did manage to spot a bottle of bleach and a mop in the garage, the top two things you don't want to find when you're concerned about a missing person. This podcast is sponsored by Caden Lane. Hey guys, finding unique, cute, and quality clothes for my kids has been a little bit tough. There are so many advertisements out there from brands saying that their clothing is the best, but when I go to check it out, there are no reviews to back it up. This, however, is where Caden Lane comes in. Caden Lane was started back in 2005 by a single mom who wanted to create better and cuter clothes, accessories, and keepsakes for her own children and for those special moments you remember forever. So think family photos. And Caden Lane is on a mission to make moms' lives easier. That shows up in the way they design clothes with extra zips and snaps to make outfit changes quick and easy. It shows up on social media where they have an entire community dedicated to sharing and discussing fun ideas and advice from moms for moms. And it also shows up in how that mission inspired their Conceive Fertility Foundation that makes donations to moms who require IVF to help start or grow a family. My daughter is obsessed with us matching, and Caden Lane has made that so easy to do. We have matching PJs, and every time I order something, her little face lights up, and I hope that that never changes. But that's just scratching the surface. Gift giving is something that I stress over endlessly. I want to give things that are cute and unique and things that I know the person will love. Caden Lane is my absolute life hack for baby showers. If you want to give someone the most adorable baby clothes, swaddles, and even customized blankets, Caden Lane is your one-stop shop. Trust me, you will thank me later. Everything is so cute and the quality is unmatched. You see these brands that go viral and you wonder if they're worth the hype, but I can confirm Caden Lane absolutely is. They have over 70,000 five-star reviews, and they have definitely earned every single one of them. If you're already thinking about summer, because same, I'm cold, Caden Lane's new swim collection is here and ready to make your adorable little dreams come true while also keeping safety in mind with their UPF 50 plus sun protection swimwear. It blocks 98% of harmful UVA and UVB rays and minimizes those sunscreen fights that we all know and love. And of course, they have matching sets for the entire family. You're not a regular mom, you're a cool mom. I absolutely love everything I've ever gotten from Caden Lane, so I'm not surprised at all that they do have those 70,000 five-star reviews and counting. Caden Lane is your one-stop shop for all your newborn, infant, and toddler apparel. Head to cadenlane.com/bigmad20 and use code BIGMAD20 for 20% off your order. Once again, that's cadenlane.com/bigmad20 for 20% off. And make sure you use my promo code BIGMAD20 so they know I sent you. According to the Virginian Pilot, the following morning, July 1st, Paul still hadn't been seen or heard from, so some of his coworkers went back to the house. This time, they watched as Letitia and her brother moved furniture into Paul's truck, which was backed up to the house. The coworkers asked Letitia where Paul was at, and once again, she said she didn't know. The coworkers wonder why she would pick now to finally move out, so they called police and asked for another welfare check. Once they knew police were on the way, they did the elite. The coworkers split up in separate directions, some staking out the home until police got there, while others handed out missing person flyers, which was something his wife certainly wasn't interested in doing. Detectives got to the house at around 11:40 that morning, while Letitia and her brother were still loading that furniture into Paul's truck. Letitia told them that she was moving the old furniture into the storage unit to make room for the new furniture she had ordered. Paul had asked her for a divorce. He had asked her to move out. He was now missing, and Letitia was telling police that she was moving in new furniture into the home that Paul wanted her out of. Got it. Police didn't know all of that context at the time, but they did know that Letitia's behavior during this conversation was odd. She avoided eye contact, rubbed her head and neck, and seemed overall frustrated that detectives were even there asking about Paul. Her words were saying that nothing was wrong, but her body language screamed, "Everything I just told you was a lie." Letitia told detectives that Paul was well-liked and didn't have any enemies, but quickly brought up an incident that happened 2 or so weeks prior, where she said someone broke into their garage and keyed Paul's charger. She fully failed to mention the ex-lover of hers who had sued her and Paul over stolen money and sperm. Before leaving, detectives told Letitia to move the furniture back into the house until further notice. She did the exact opposite because Letitia does what Letitia wants, and she hauled that shit right over to the storage unit, unlike she was told. Later that day, detectives learned that Paul's cell phone was pinging 25 miles away in Elizabeth City. They went to the area and searched hotels and restaurants, thinking he might really be on a trip with a girlfriend, but there was no sign of him on any surveillance footage. And that's probably because Paul didn't have his phone. Investigators got a call about it being found at an elementary school in Elizabeth City, somewhere he would have had no business going. The phone was still in good condition, so detectives were able to go through it and found that Paul hadn't made any calls or sent any texts since he was reported missing. As for his bank accounts and credit cards, neither of those had been touched either. At this point, there was no question that Paul's disappearance was suspicious. Detectives spoke to witnesses, including family members and co-workers, and that's when they learned that Paul's relationship with Letitia was not as amicable as she had made it seem, and Paul was actively trying to get her out of his life and out of her home. Neighbors further told detectives that Paul and Letitia rarely crossed paths. When one got home, the other would leave. Neighbors said they never heard any arguments and police hadn't been called to the home. The only issue they could think of was 2 weeks prior when someone had keyed Paul's charger while it was in the garage, but who would go through the trouble of what sounds like a possible B&E just to get into someone's garage? Sure, Paul loved that charger, but you would have to know Paul to know that. The only person who seems to know Paul and dislike him is Letitia, but I digress. According to court documents, at around 5:30 p.m. on July 2nd, detectives went to the Jandreau home for a planned meeting with Letitia. They also planned to pick up Paul's laptop for examination. Detectives knocked on the door, but once again, no one answered. They noticed a note on the rear door, which mentioned that Letitia had walked to River's Edge, which was an adjacent neighborhood. She said they could call her on the phone, which they did, but of course she didn't answer. They headed to River's Edge to look for her themselves, but you'll be shocked to know that they did not find her. While detectives were actively searching for Letitia, they got a call from a 911 dispatcher who said that Letitia had called 911 to ask why detectives were at her house. Girl left a note for said detectives that she claimed to be puzzled by to 911. Letitia told the operator that she was in Chesapeake, Virginia, and wouldn't be back home until the next day, but the dispatcher is a dispatcher and could tell that Letitia was very much inside of her and Paul's home. With that, detectives went and got a warrant, and it was go time. According to Investigation Discovery, investigators got their warrant, duh, and went back to the house a little after midnight. Obviously, no one was gonna open the door, but they still tried, and when that didn't work, they welcomed themselves into the Jandreau home through the garage. Well, that was the plan at least, but there was something blocking the door. A bag of trash had been pushed up against it, but with a little wiggle and a push here and there, they were able to finally squeeze in. Once inside, they were hit with the unmistakable, overwhelming smell of decomposition. There was no doubt in their minds that it had to be Paul. There was no way Letitia had been living in that house and hadn't smelled that smell. All signs pointed to her being involved, and if she was willing to do whatever she had done to Paul, what was she willing to do to these detectives? They had no idea where she was at this point, and the bottom line now was that safety came first, and they could start looking for Paul's body once they cleared the house. They went through every room, clearing every doorway, and eventually found Letitia playing a murderous game of hide-and-seek. She had hidden out in the back of a closet under a pile of clothes and blankets. When they finally got her out from underneath all of that, it seemed like maybe she had finally given up. Instead of putting up a fight or trying to come up with some cockamamie story about why she was in a closet under a laundry fort, she simply did what she was told and was taken to the station for questioning. According to Investigation Discovery, during her interviews, Letitia avoided eye contact, hid her face, and cried. Her self-preservation seemed to kick back in again, and she did her best to dodge questions and explain away her behavior, like when she told detectives that she was only in the closet because she was scared and didn't know what had happened to Paul. She also made sure to let them know that she was tired of dealing with law enforcement, and that must be so hard for her, but I assure you no one cares. While Letitia was being questioned, the rest of the detectives were busy scouring every single inch of the Jandrow home. In the garage, they found a large 50-gallon tote under that pile of trash that had been blocking the door. That tote is where Paul's body was found. He had been wrapped in several layers of plastic that had been taped together, and in between those layers was kitty litter. Court documents note that Paul's autopsy showed that he had been shot not once, but five times. Once in the chest, once in the abdomen, once in the thigh, once in the hand, and once in the neck. The medical examiner determined that the wound to Paul's neck was done at close range, and based on that gunshot wound to his hand, it's almost certain that Paul fought for his life. In addition to the five gunshot wounds, Paul also had roughly 12 lacerations to his head, all of which were consistent with being struck by a blunt object like a pistol. Detectives had found Paul's body, but the investigation was far from over. They continued their search of the house, and it was what nightmares are made of. In Paul's bedroom, remember, they slept in separate rooms, investigators found blood spatter on his bed frame, blood stains on a big rug that was glued to the floor, and freshly scrubbed floors. You can scrub the floor all you want, but when a rug is glued to the subfloor, it is going to encase all the evidence you need. Detectives managed to pull it up, and underneath of it, they found a skid mark left by a bullet. There was also a bullet hole behind a dresser, another in the bedroom door, and another in the bedroom walls. Each of those holes had been filled with caulk. In the kitchen, they found plastic wrap, foil, duct tape, paint, caulk, paintbrushes, frosted glass spray, and various cleaning supplies. In other parts of the house, investigators found strips of carpet that had been cut out of the floor, along with rugs and pieces of furniture wrapped up and ready to be moved out. They actually found a piece of furniture that used to be in front of Paul's bed in that storage unit Letitia had talked about, and if you guessed that it had Paul's blood on it, you would be correct. In a small black bag in Letitia's BMW, investigators found a .45 caliber handgun with an empty magazine. But there was more. Two additional magazines were also found in that bag that contained live rounds. In Paul's truck, they found a Lowe's receipt dated for July 1st for the purchase of a large tote just like the one Paul's body had been found in. This episode is sponsored by Care Of. Hey guys, before the podcast, nutrition was my job. There's a lot of focus on macros out there, your proteins, your carbs, and your fats, but your micros, your vitamins and minerals are also so important too, which is where Care Of comes in. Care Of is a health and wellness company that ships high-quality, personalized vitamins, supplements, and powders conveniently to your door every month. All you have to do is take their short online quiz about your lifestyle and health goals, and Care Of will give you doctor-backed recommendations. It is that easy. I took the quiz and they asked me questions that wouldn't have occurred to me when it comes to figuring out which vitamins are best for me and my body, like how often I eat dairy and what my stress levels were looking like. Obviously, those are only two of the questions on there, but because I don't eat a ton of dairy, they recommended a calcium supplement, and because I am indeed a wee bit stressed because I like to overcommit, they recommended ashwagandha. It really did make a difference, and I'm sure that my bones are thanking me for that calcium. And they weren't just like, here, take this, trust us. They explained to me why they recommended each of the vitamins that they did, and then I was able to go in and pick and choose which ones that I wanted to incorporate into my daily routine. Their vitamins are curated with research-backed ingredients and optimal doses, and I just love how educated I have felt in this process. Oh, and Care of Vitamins come in these cute little daily packs, so I'm not opening a bunch of different bottles. I can throw them in my bag when I'm in a hurry, or I can pop a few in my suitcase when it's time to travel. The convenience here is 100% on point for sticking to a routine. They even have an app that helps you track how you're feeling and playback insights about your results over time so you can adjust your routine as your needs change. I absolutely love Care of and the simplicity it brought to what felt like an overwhelming amount of choices and adding yet another thing to my daily routine. It has never felt like a chore. It's kind of felt empowering a little bit, especially knowing that how I felt pre-vitamin life versus post-vitamin life is night and day. For 50% off your first Care of subscription order, go to takecareof.com and enter code BIGMAD50. For 50% off your first Care of subscription order, go to takecareof.com and enter code BIGMAD50. Once law enforcement was done searching the house, detectives broke the news to Letitia that they had found Paul's body in the garage. She seemed genuinely surprised to hear this information and claimed she wasn't the one who put him there. That is 0% believable considering the all-consuming smell of decomposition, but she knew words and she was trying her best to string a few of them together. Letitia's theory was that before Paul disappeared, she had stopped in downtown Elizabeth City and told a few random men that Paul had been mistreating her, because who doesn't vent about their estranged husband to complete strangers in the city? She said she gave the strangers her address and key code to her door because all of that makes sense, and Letitia suggested that maybe, just maybe, those strange city men were so taken aback by her story that they had taken the address and key code she had supplied them out of the goodness of her heart and killed her husband. They would have somehow managed to do that without her hearing 5 gunshots in the struggle that seems to have clearly taken place. And maybe they had also come back to break in, scrub her floors, cut up her carpet, and caulk the bullet holes. The HGTV hitmen, if you will. Letitia's theory was the most believable story of no time, and 12 or so hours later, it looks like she decided she needed to come up with a new one. This time, she said that in the early hours of June 30th, Paul came into her bedroom with a rifle. She claims that Paul told her she had 5 minutes to leave the house or he'd kill her, then went back to his room. Letitia claims she believed Paul would kill her, so she grabbed a .45 caliber gun from the side of her bed, which she claims to have stolen from an Air Force general she went on a couple of dates with. She said she rushed down the hallway, and when she got to Paul's bedroom door, she saw a shadow and fired at it. She then says she entered Paul's room and fired in his direction. With bullets flying, Letitia claims that Paul backed away and dropped his gun, then moved closer without the gun, jumping towards her and falling on top of her. She says she kept shooting until she could escape from underneath him. That's when she noticed Paul was dead. She claims that she cleaned up the scene and acted like she didn't know where he was, out of panic. Detectives were not buying any of that, so Letitia was charged with first-degree murder and theft of a firearm, you know, from the general that she claims to have stolen her murder weapon from. Her mugshot looks like she eats souls for breakfast. Paul's family was completely devastated by his loss, but they were really thankful that an arrest had been made so quickly. Paul's brother told the Virginian Pilot that he credits Paul's co-workers with helping the case, saying, "Paul was a stand-up guy with a very close group of friends. I don't think the sheriff's department would have gotten to her so quickly without his friends. They stood vigilantly at his home and never gave her the chance to dispose of the body." Following Paul's murder, Andy, whom Letitia had stolen the sperm from back in 2005, filed a sworn statement seeking the suspension or dismissal of the district attorney. Andy said he'd gotten Letitia to admit to the plan where she coerced him to give her money and donate his sperm. He said he'd given the DA a written record of what she said and they promised to take it to a grand jury, but they never did. In his statement, Andy alleged that maybe Paul would still be alive if the DA looked into what he told them. But this was a civil suit, so I'm really not sure how he got it from A to Q. Anywho, the district attorney was not suspended nor dismissed. In January of 2011, though, a judge ordered Letitia to pay Andy nearly $126,000 in regards to that lawsuit. Letitia's murder trial began on September 24th of 2012. According to Investigation Discovery, the prosecution told the jury that Letitia killed Paul because she didn't want to lose the affluent lifestyle that he provided her with. On the morning of June 30th, Letitia ambushed Paul as he was getting ready for work. She shot through his bedroom door just as he was about to open it. As he tried to get away, she opened the door fully and shot him multiple times. A struggle ensued, and Letitia managed to overpower Paul, hitting him with the gun over and over and over again. When Letitia realized Paul was dead, she folded his body and hid it in a small tote and put it in a closet under some clothes. On July 1st, Letitia bought a larger tote from Lowe's. She transferred Paul's body into that one and dragged it downstairs. Generally, it'd be hard to believe that one person could lift a grown man's body, put it into a tote, and then drag it downstairs, but Letitia was jacked, and she could absolutely do that. The jury heard the evidence from the prosecution, but it was time for the defense to pull a rabbit out of their ass. They claimed the whole self-defense song and dance and that the bullet holes in the walls were evidence of a struggle. There's no doubt there was a struggle, but it seems hard to believe that it was the one Letitia concocted at the last hour. You know, the one that followed the HGTV meets Investigation Discovery Stranger Murder for Hire. We knew Letitia was an asshole, but she was also a dumbass. She took the stand in her own defense and, according to court documents, gave the jury a rundown of her and Paul's relationship. She said they initially wanted to start a family, but grew apart when they couldn't. In January of 2010, they decided to continue living together, but lead separate lives. And isn't that a little Photoshop summary of their life? Letitia said that she and Paul rarely saw each other and that they only communicated via text, but somehow, he was often always angry at her. In early June, she said he demanded she leave the house by the end of the month. Letitia claimed that when she said no, the relationship became volatile. Letitia testified that Paul would kick her door every morning, telling her to leave. Things escalated on June 20th, according to her, when he called the police and accused her of keying his car. After talking to an officer, she says Paul came inside, poked her head with his finger, and threatened to kill her. What a scene to create, anyway. That evening, Letitia said that she went to the garage to get a gun from a toolbox, but it wasn't there. So she went to the retired Air Force General's house and took a .45 caliber handgun, which she kept with her from then on. Letitia said that at around 4 p.m. on June 29th, she went to Paul's door to tell him that she wasn't going to leave by the end of the month. And I'm pretty sure she already said that she told him she wasn't leaving. Anywho, Paul apparently opened the door in her version of events, yelled at her, and got very close to her face, insisting that she leave. Letitia claims that she did leave this time and didn't come back until about 11 p.m. When she got back, she said that all the lights were off, so she just went to her room and fell asleep at around 3 a.m. But at around 4 or 4:30 a.m., Letitia claims that Paul entered her room and demanded she leave. He then grabbed her feet and dragged her down the hallway before going back to his room. That seems to be an added little detail from her first self-defense claim, and it also doesn't make a ton of sense, but let's go on. Letitia says she went back to bed, but claims that Paul came into her room again, but this time with a long gun, threatening to kill her if she didn't leave within 5 minutes. He then went back to his bedroom again, so a terrified Letitia grabbed her .45 caliber gun, which she stole from the general, and headed down the hallway towards her husband. Once she was near Paul's bedroom, she saw Shadow and fired. Letitia continued into Paul's room, firing in his direction. Paul backed away, dropped his gun, lunged at her, then fell on top of her. Letitia said she kept on shooting and hitting Paul with the gun. All of that seems kind of hard to do at the same time, considering where the barrel of the gun would be pointing in between both of those actions. But let's keep going. After a few seconds, Letitia says she was able to crawl out from underneath Paul, who was now dead. When she saw the blood on the floor, she started cleaning up. She didn't call the police. She started cleaning up. Letitia claims that she felt blank and couldn't focus in the days following the shooting, though she certainly seemed focused enough to organize the removal, wrapping, and all that of the evidentiary furniture, which had blood on it. She claims she couldn't remember detectives coming to her house and could only remember cleaning the house, renting a storage unit, buying a large tote for Paul's body, and discarding Paul's phone in Elizabeth City. And that seems pretty damn focused. Hey guys, I love makeup and skincare, period. It is one of the few things that I'm really picky about when it comes to quality, but the price tag hits me in my feels. I have a hard time justifying the cost when it comes to getting the quality that I want, but fear not, because I found a skincare life hack that I refuse to gatekeep. Enter Brandify. Did you know that whether it's sold at a Spokane Walmart or a Soho boutique, beauty brands share the same handful of manufacturers and factories? Basically, this means that regardless of where you're getting your products, there is a solid chance that they're very similar formulations at insanely different price points. Brandify learned about this and did something about it. They partner with world-class chemists, dermatologists, and the same manufacturers of the prestige brands you love to formulate cult favorites without the hefty markup. No middleman, no high price, no marketing hype. Just affordable quality because you deserve it. Brandify creates luxury alternatives inspired by brands like Drunk Elephant, SkinCeuticals, Sunday Riley, and more. Brandify's best-selling clinical vitamin C plus E plus Ferulic Defense Serum costs $133 less than the industry's gold standard. Brandify is so confident in their ability to produce a product at the quality you deserve that they offer a 100 days, 100% guarantee. If you're not satisfied with your Brandify products, you can return them within 100 days for a full refund. Their products are 100% cruelty-free, as they should be, and packaged as sustainably as possible to, you know, preserve the precious goop and protect our planet, because we only have one of them. They also have this amazing app, which I am obsessed with, where they help you save even more money. You just go on there and pick the makeup that you know you love but don't love the cost of, and they compare it to other beauty alternatives through real reviews and unbiased opinions from makeup and skincare shoppers just like you and me. I recently did this with a bronzer. I just could not justify the price of it anymore, and they nailed it. I found one that was way cheaper, and it is now my go-to. As for skincare, Brandify has honestly kind of monopolized all of that, whether it is serums, whether it is moisturizer. Honestly, I feel like I use all things Brandify, including their tinted sunscreen. Absolutely love it. 10 out of 10 recommend. Can't say enough amazing things. Go to brandifyskin.com/bigmad and use discount code BIGMAD for 25% off your order, which will auto-apply at checkout. That's brandifyskin.com/bigmad and use discount code BIGMAD for 25% off. On September 28th, after less than 2 entire hours of deliberation, there are movies longer than the time it took to decide guilt in this case. The jury found Letitia guilty of first-degree murder and stealing that firearm. According to the Daily Advance, she showed no emotion when the verdict was announced. Letitia was sentenced to 6 to 8 months for the theft and life in prison without any chance of parole for Paul's murder. She has tried and failed miserably to appeal her convictions and will spend the remainder of her days exercising in the rec yard and winning at nothing. For photos pertaining to this case, check out Paul's highlight at the top of my Instagram profile at The Heather Ashley, and join me there today at noon Eastern, where you go live with me and we talk about today's case and all other true crime cases on your mind. If you love this podcast, feel free to leave a review. It makes my day every single time. And if you have a case you'd like to hear covered, share it with Big Mad True Crime on social media, because all cases are covered by listener request. I'll be bringing you a brand new case next week, and I cannot wait. But until then, we out. We are officially at the end of today's episode, which means that it's time to share a view that made my entire day. Let me find my phone. Kyle sends them to me. Bloop. Oh, this is so nice. Okay. This one is from Just the Stories and says, Heather tells it like it is, no time wasted, all facts checked, and victims and survivors always prioritized and respected. It's like having a really smart and well-informed best friend telling you gripping true crime stories with exactly the right level of outrage without ever actually screaming. I'd be screaming. I don't know how she does it, but sure am glad she does. I love you so much. That was so nice. You guys are the best. Really, you are. It means a lot to me that you took the time to do that. You didn't have to be nice, but you were. And that was really neat. Okay, love you, bye. If you have made it this far, welcome to today's hot take brought to you by This Girl's Guilty as Fuck. She had a gem of a man. Everything we know about Paul is that Paul was a gem of a man. And 31 years in the military, no joke. Literally everyone that I could find who talked about Paul at all talked about different unique ways that he was amazing. Like him showing up to the birth of their child, obviously after the birth was done, because like that's super personal. And just always being the guy like, I'm stranded, help. And he's like putting his cape on, ready to roll. Like he's your sidekick. He's your biggest cheerleader, always there for you, always down for whatever. The kind of friend everyone needs. And then fucking Letitia rolls around. She should have just read her books. Read your books, Letitia. Lift your weights. Read your books. But no. No. And like, what was the deal with the IVF? What was her plan? And where did she put the sperm? No. How do you? No. Maybe she just chucked it. Who found it? Nope. We're going down a rabbit hole. What the fuck? Can you imagine finding out that your significant other cheated on you by the cheaty? What would you name them? Manstress, mistress, manstress. Either of those. Suing you because your significant other stole reproductive specimens from them, along with $7,000. And I'm pretty sure that IVF is way more than $7,000. I know some people who have gotten IVF, and it is pricey. I don't think $7,000 is going to cover it, but also, I haven't done it myself, so I could Google it. Let's Google it. Why did I say Google like I was from Wisconsin? How much does IVF cost? Up to $30,000. Maybe. I don't know. Look, I don't know what I'm talking about. I just know that Letitia sucks. She's a sperm-stealing, home-wrecking, murderous asshole. Little shithead. And what's your point? I don't get why people don't just get divorced. Did she have... Yeah, she had a job. She worked at freaking Blackwater. She could have run off to be with the general that she stole the gun from. And what a shitty guy to steal a fucking gun from. Dude. No. No, sir. And I felt like that couldn't have been true, but she was literally convicted for it. The fuck? No, ma'am. She worked at Blackwater. She was a bodybuilding jack lady who married the highest enlisted rank dude that you could reach in the freaking Navy after 31 years. And she murdered him with a general's stolen gun. The fuck? And she was enormous. When I say that, this woman had muscle on muscle. Her muscles had muscles. Her muscles worked out with other muscles, and they talked about protein. Her muscles had personality, which good for her. I used to bodybuild-ish. Like, I didn't, like, compete and stuff because I didn't want to lose a bunch of weight because I really like food and stuff, and I get real cranky. But, and, like, nutrition, you know, it freaked me out. This is not about me. So she was huge. She was fit. And she, I wouldn't want to get in a fight with her. No. This jacked bodybuilder lady loved books and killed a man who retired at the highest enlisted rank you could get in the U.S. Navy with a gun she stole from a general. And it was a 45. I don't know if you, not everybody's going to know what a 45 is, but just know that it's gigantic. If you've ever seen like a cowboy show or, I don't know, the show Weeds and some of the guns in there, 45s. The ones where you're like, that's going to break your wrist bones, 45s. Nope. No, ma'am. That, I don't, it would have been so loud. I wonder if anyone heard any bangs or anything, or if it was so early in the morning when this happened that just nobody was awake for it. Or maybe it's the kind of noise that jolt, but that was like five of them. And, ma'am. So she's like, oh, I shoot at him or whatever. And then like he drops his gun. Why would he drop his gun? Because you have a, also, why did he, oh yeah, because she was like, oh, he went back to his bedroom. Would he just hold on to the gun while he was there? And why was there so many times that he went, we all went back to bed. We all went back to a bedroom. And it was like, no, I'm not leaving. And then, by the way, I'm going to remind you, no, I'm not leaving after we argue. No. What? Why is that part of your fake story? Your fake story made you look bad. But also, I don't know, she could eat crackers and I'd talk shit about her at this point. You know, fuck that lady. I'm so sad for Paul's family. He was a gem. His poor daughters. Ugh. Whatever. We hate Letitia. Okay.